Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah.
Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia, Solartopia.
That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns. Solartopia song. We're back with you for another hour in Solartopia. We got three tremendous guests with us, Stacy, Libby, and Beverly. We're in between sad radioactive anniversaries. March 11th since 2011, seventh anniversary, 7 years since the catastrophe at Fukushima, which has not ended in any way, shape, or form. Massive quantities of radiation still pouring into the Pacific Ocean and into the atmosphere around the Fukushima area. People still dying during the so-called cleanup, which is never going to happen at Fukushima. And now the insane Japanese government and its fascist leader, Shinzo Abe, dragging the world's athletes there in 2020 for the Olympics. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. How crazy can you be? Hot spots being found all over the archipelago, even in Tokyo. So it's a nightmare. And Beverly, Levy, and Stacy are going to talk with us about that. And then upcoming, and we'll start with Levy, this, the 28th. It's been since 1979, so it's 39 years now since the disaster at Three Mile Island. The owners of Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania denied that there was any melting of fuel. They denied that there were any radiation releases. And I actually went into Central Pennsylvania in 1980 and interviewed people. And I got to tell you, it was the worst week of my life. But Libby Halevi, who has the Nuclear Hotspot podcast, was there at the time. So, Libby, let's start with you. If you'll tell us a bit about yourself and what you were doing in Central Pennsylvania and what it's done to your life since 1979. I'm sure we'd appreciate it. I've been with you many times on panels on your show. You're a brilliant and very powerful testifier to the situation. So, Libby Halevi, let's hear it.
Thank you, Harvey, for the opportunity. I was living in Los Angeles, and it was only a fluke that I was in Pennsylvania at Three Mile Island when the accident happened. I was visiting an old friend who had just moved there, and I didn't even know that there was a nuclear reactor down the road, because if you didn't know about such things, you didn't pay attention to them. And we found out about it, but it was downplayed. It was downplayed in the media. Everybody was saying, oh, it's just being exaggerated. It's media hype. And the people I was staying with did not have a television set. They were very media-less. So we were not caught up in what was happening in the broadcast world. And by being there, I was literally only 1 mile away. I mean, you could walk out the front door, take a turn to the right, take a slight angle, and there were the cooling towers right there. I happened to be alone in the house that I was staying when the announcement went down the street for evacuation. Stay inside, keep your doors and windows closed. And it was absolute terror beyond anything I can possibly describe, though I've been trying ever since. There was no transportation available to me. The house did not have a basement to hide from radiation or a blast, because in those days we hadn't yet been given the propaganda that there was not going to be a nuclear explosion. And as a result, the phones didn't work. So I was completely isolated with this and did not even know if there was going to be a way out. And from that moment, from that life-changing set of experiences of being trapped with a nuclear reactor malfunctioning 1 mile away and having all my programming from the 1950s Cold War, radiation is bad because it's going to come from the Russians. I knew that radiation didn't have to come from the Russians. It was going to come from my own government, and it was only 1 mile away. And I might already be dead because of the amount of radiation that was there. It was an existential experience of my own mortality. And we evacuated. I don't need to go into every jot and tittle of this. I explain this under other circumstances. But when I got back to Los Angeles, the good thing was I was no longer stuck in the middle of all of that radiation. But the bad thing was that there was nobody to discuss it with. Nobody understood what I had been through. They made jokes about it. They said, gee, do you glow in the dark and hope you're not contagious? And I was suffering from hardcore frontline PTSD. I was in post-traumatic stress before we even knew what the term was. And it took about a year and a half before that broke for me. And I was living outside of the country at the time because I couldn't bear to be in the United States. The immediate results that I had was that in my PTSD, I drank, I isolated, I couldn't get work done. I couldn't concentrate. I had nightmares, sleep disturbances, ate too much, and gained about 25 pounds. I was a mess. And it took leaving the country for 6 months. I was living on a kibbutz in Israel for me to get calm enough to be able to reflect upon my life, break out of the PTSD enough to say, okay, I can go back to the States, but I'm not going to have anything to do with nuclear. That was part of my thinking. And that was the way I existed. I ignored everything, including Chernobyl. And along the way was experiencing a progressive loss of energy and stamina so that I couldn't get things done. And nothing checked out medically to let me know what it was. It was only after Fukushima, first of all, that I became active. But also it was after Fukushima that I discovered through reading that a traumatic experience like that can put you into a circumstance where your adrenals are so overloaded, they start to not being able to handle adrenal stress. And what I was suffering from was exhausted adrenals, and, of course, my thyroid was affected as well. Fortunately, I've been able to rebuild them. But my major response after Three Mile Island was to stuff it, ignore it, pay no attention to it, pay no attention to anything nuclear, not get involved. And yet any time I did, there would be an overwhelming experience of grief and fear. But that was all subliminal until Fukushima.
Wow, that's an amazing narrative. I guess I experienced it to a certain extent. By 1979, I had already been involved with the anti-nuclear movement for 6 years. I mean, we kind of helped start it beginning in 73, 74, and I knew a lot about nuclear power, but I had never really experienced it. I made a point of not going anywhere near commercial reactors, but in 1980, I went into central Pennsylvania. I heard from a woman called me from Edders, which is right across from the reactors, Jane Lee. She's a great woman. She's since passed away, and started telling me about all these things that people were experiencing and the animals and stuff. And as a journalist, I saw, well, there's a hot story, a bad pun, and I got assigned from Rolling Stone, and I went into with Rolling Stone to and I wrote a piece, and they wouldn't publish it because they said there wasn't enough corroborating evidence to confirm all the health disasters that I was witnessing. I was sitting in people's kitchens, in these farm kitchens, interviewing people who were showing me their tumors. This is a year after the accident. The rashes, emphysema, stroke, showing me mutated animals. I mean, I thought I was in the middle of a Japanese science fiction movie. It was the worst week of my life. And then I, you know, I wrote up this piece, and Rolling Stone, of all people, said, no, we're not going to publish this. You know, really angered me. So I actually wound up writing a book with three other people called Killing Our Own, which is available free on the internet. And so what we decided to do was to document other places where people had been harmed by radiation, so you could see that it wasn't just Three Mile Island. And that we wrote about, I did it with Norman Solomon and Robert Alvarez and Eleanor Walters, and you could see at Rocky Flats in Colorado, and where there were spills from nuclear waste dumps, the uranium mining operations, the people who did painted radium watch dials. I mean, the point was to create a context of other places so that people wouldn't see Three Mile Island as an isolated incident. We also wrote, Norman Solomon wrote a large section on atomic soldiers. These were people who were exposed to radioactive fallout, atomic guys who were in the military. And, you know, the American military, in all its brilliance, would blow off these atomic tests, and they had 250,000 soldiers, you know, through the various tests, as close as a mile to the explosions, and they march them right into ground zero. And these guys were dying in droves, and the military was saying, oh, no, it got nothing to do with radiation. And, you know, this is a time, of course, when all this stuff about Agent Orange was coming out. And, I wrote this book called Killing Our Own. As I said, it's published by Dell Delta. It did very, very well in the interest of some terms. It actually sold more hardbacks than paperbacks. And it's still basically used as a source book. And, Levy, have you had any symptoms that you would consider radiation-related from being exposed in Central Pennsylvania?
You know, I have a vague recollection of maybe that metallic taste in the mouth, but I was one of the fortunate ones in that I was there for a very short time. I was there for the first 3 days of the accident, and then we evacuated, and then I was just back in that area for a day and a half, just long enough to go to an NRC press conference and hire a freelance photographer to take pictures of me with the reactors in the background, just so I could prove to people I was there, because nobody would believe it. It was too crazy a story. The friend that I was visiting had just moved there 3 months before. So what were the odds? But in any event, so I was only in that area for maybe a total of 5 to 6 days after the accident, whereas there are people who, of course, have lived there ever since or lived there for varying periods of time in the wake of the accident. I think it's interesting what you were saying about the non-reporting and no way of getting official word on the tumors and the illnesses in the early days, because there was not a medical, any kind of epidemiology done. And it didn't start until 5 years after the accident happened, during which time more than half the population who had lived in that area had moved away. And I can't say that I blame them. So any numbers that were finally gotten were extremely skewed. And I'm, from what I know about how nuclear operates, because of my work on nuclear hot seat for almost 7 years now, I believe that was absolutely intentional. That they're doing it in Japan right now, that they are making certain that there's no way of getting accurate figures on the accident in the immediate wake of the accident, because that would be too frightening and that would be too much against the moneyed interests that are backing nuclear in all of its many forms. So they simply, I think Beverly can speak much more specifically to that as to how the medical information is being destroyed or simply not being collected or is being skewed in Japan, so we don't get accurate numbers of exactly what's happening to the population since Fukushima. We did have a nuclear hot seat on that, Voices from Japan, just last week, which focused on child thyroid cancer rates in Fukushima. So if Beverly's on, she'd be a great person to pick it up here.
Well, Beverly and Stacy, we'll get to you in a second, but there was, in fact,
in Pennsylvania, the state of Pennsylvania maintained a tumor registry, and where they kept track of tumors and so that they could get understanding of the cancer in the state. And soon after Three Mile Island, they discontinued the tumor registry. And there was also epidemiological ongoing records of infant death rates. And the state of Pennsylvania lied about the infant death rates after Three Mile Island. We saw a very significant leap in infant death rates in Harrisburg after Three Mile Island. And the state denied, that, and that was a big piece of our book, and the state denied that it could have anything with Three Mile Island. They said it was because of cigarette smoking, which made no sense whatsoever, because they weren't correcting for cigarette smoking. They weren't separating out the people who smoked cigarettes versus those who didn't. So obviously the sample included everybody who smoked cigarettes and everybody who didn't. And the leap was a very, very significant leap in infant death rates in Harrisburg. Couldn't have anything to do with cigarette smoking. And then they lied about, they moved numbers around. It was outrageous. And I have to acknowledge there was a fantastic guy at the University of Pittsburgh named Ernest Sternglass. Mm. He was a radiologist.
Absolutely.
He knew Einstein. He was a theoretical physicist as well. And he counted everybody else. When the accident happened, he went to Harrisburg to demand that the governor evacuate people because there was no evacuation. And finally, the governor, Richard Thornburgh, grudgingly, 2 days after the accident, asked the pregnant women to leave. And they didn't go very far along. I mean, in some cases, they may well have moved right into the plume of radiation because at that time it blew north. It was an incredible mess. We'll continue talking about that. Beverly, you, I know, have close ties to Fukushima and to what's gone on in Japan. And then Stacy will get to you. Thank you for waiting so patiently. Beverly, can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you're involved with Fukushima and what you want people to know?
Okay, sure. I lived in Japan for 20 years and, in fact, was living with my family, my husband and my son, who was 9 years old at the time. We were living in Yokohama, which is just south of Tokyo, during the Tohoku earthquake and the subsequent nuclear disaster in Fukushima. So we experienced the whole thing. My son, it took us 9 hours to get him home from school that day. All the lights in the whole city in Yokohama were off. The train lines were disrupted. It was the biggest earthquake that I have ever experienced. And, you know, when all of this was going on, we also had no telephone communication. And so we had no idea what the extent of the disaster was really until almost the next day. And on the 12th of March, we started watching TV, and that's when the nuclear reactors started going one after another. And at that same time, while I was watching this happen on TV, my sister called from the United States, from here in California, and she said, I was, you know, frantically, excitedly talking to her, you know, this is happening, this is terrible, the nuclear reactors are exploding on television, and she said, just sit down for a minute and shut up. And she told me my mom had a heart attack here in California in Seal Beach. And so my son and I made preparations, and we left on March 16th, 2011, to come back here to be with my mother. And since that time, my husband has been commuting back and forth between California and Japan, and my son and I have pretty much been here. We do go back to Japan once or twice a year for visits. And my husband and I really quite early on, you know, maybe within a year of the disaster, we started becoming very involved in, you know, learning more about Fukushima, becoming connected with people there. And at the same time here in Southern California in 2012 is when the San Onofre nuclear generating station leaked. And here we were living 30 miles from that. So we both became very involved in, you know, the activism surrounding the shutdown of that plant and kind of working with the Fukushima side all along. And I have been involved in bringing different people here as speakers and setting up film screenings. And more recently, over the past 5 years or so, I've been working with Libby doing Voices from Japan on Nuclear Hot Seat. And my husband goes around Fukushima and he interviews people. He does all the research. I do the translations. And we have a group of professional voiceover actors that voice over our interviews. And we've just made a lot of friends along the way. We have learned a lot about what's going on that doesn't make it into the news. My husband was saying the other night that he really feels like there's this whole Japanese language wall to a lot. There's just a whole wealth of information that's in Japanese. It's being done by amazing researchers and citizen scientists and activists over there that is just simply not available in English. And we're just trying to do our little part to make that more available. And,
well, tell us, Beverly, what actually is happening to the people and the animals around Fukushima? And we know that around Three Mile Island, despite the denials of the industry, we know that people died and are dying from the radiation releases of Three Mile Island. We know that animals died and are dying from the radiation releases at Three Mile Island. What is happening around Fukushima?
Well, the most specific thing that I can speak to that, you know, I have actual verifiable data on and that we have spoken to a lot of people who are really close to the problem, including doctors, would be thyroid cancer in children. There is a lot of other stuff out there, you know, that people talk about, but there haven't necessarily been studies on, or, you know, it's more like gossip in the neighborhood. And I really can't speak to that because we don't have data on those things. Another thing you might find data on is animals. You know, we saw that movie the other night, Nuclear Cattle. The cattle that were on ranches quite close to the nuclear reactor, there were a few ranchers that actually kept their cows and didn't cull them like the government required. And there's a veterinarian who was doing research on that. Unfortunately, I learned this after we saw the film, that veterinarian, although he wanted to do research on it, he doesn't have the funds to do it. And I used to work in a university, a national university in Japan, so I know this. Professors in Japan are funded by the Japanese government. So if you're not doing something that, you know, they want you to do, then you're not going to get funds for it. So I think his research on the thyroids and so forth with those cows is kind of hit a wall.
Another thing, I don't know if you've spoken with damage.
Dr. Timothy Musso. He's a professor here in the United States, and he's studied birds and other animals in Fukushima. And he has said that there have been things that have been happening to birds. I can't detail them out exactly. But he also said something about, you know, that his research is not something that people really want to come out and provide funds for.
Right.
And I think a lot of the scientists are having problems with that. But thyroid cancer is something I can speak to a little bit more specifically.
Well, do you have what would be considered hard evidence of additional thyroid cancers in the Fukushima area since the accident?
Oh, yes. Well, absolutely. You can listen really in more detail on the last episode of Nuclear Hot Seat, but I can kind of summarize that for you here.
Please.
The Fukushima Prefecture has done a Fukushima Prefectural Health Survey, and they've surveyed the thyroids of 380,000 children in three different rounds from 2011 to 2017. And the numbers on that, there have been 190 suspected and confirmed cases of cancer, and 154 of these children have actually had surgery to move all or part of their thyroids. Now, maybe that doesn't sound like very much to you, but when you think that pediatric thyroid cancer is actually a very, very rare disease, it's usually about 1 in 1 million children that get it. This is an occurrence rate of 1 in 2,000 people. So the thyroid cancers have really been skyrocketing. And even with those numbers, they're just the tip of the iceberg, because the government has been trying all these different tricks to skew the numbers. So one of the worst things in my mind is that they've been omitting follow-up cases that didn't require immediate surgery. So there's about 2,000 to 2,500 kids that have a certain level of abnormality, as they call them, cysts or nodules, and if they have them of a certain size, they need to have follow-up. They need to be observed carefully. So those kids have been routed into the National Health Insurance System and so forth, and they're no longer counted in the boundaries of the survey. So if they get cancer, they're never going to be counted. It's kind of like you were talking about a couple minutes ago with the tumor registry being stopped after Three Mile Island. Well, that's what they're doing here. They're not registering these kids that may come actually get a full-blown case of cancer. They've also tried to assign blame to what they call an overdiagnosis or a screening effect happening because they've surveyed so many kids at once. But the problem with that is that the cancers that have actually been had surgery done on them, the kids who've had surgery, their cancers were actually really very serious cases that had already spread to the lymph glands and other ones that were really close to the vocal cords. So they're not cases of overdiagnosis and being overly careful. And then they do stuff like cherry-picking numbers, compare with Chernobyl. They leave out whole age groups, and, they only focus on the areas in Chernobyl where the radiation contamination was the highest. Another problem is that the DNA samples that were taken are being monopolized by Nagasaki University, and every time they say, well, Fukushima DNA doesn't compare with Chernobyl DNA, so there's no link to the accident. Those studies have no peer review, and those samples are not accessible to any other scientists to study. And Nagasaki University has a history of, working on the cancer cases after the bombing. During World War II, and they're all involved in cover up from the beginning. There's so many problems with this study. They don't include people outside of Fukushima, or people who have moved, or people who were older than 18 at the time. And there was just last week some news about a support group that has actually given aid to people that live outside of the prefecture to get this screening and treatment for thyroid problems. And they said that kids that they had helped who had actually come down with thyroid cancer, there 30% of them had a recurrence rate of thyroid cancer, as opposed to kids inside the prefecture who had been screened and given prompt treatment. The kids that have been given prompt treatment because of the Fukushima Prefectural Health Survey, those kids only had a 2% recurrence rate. So I think thyroid cancer is something that, you know, it's proven that it's linked to radiation, ionizing radiation exposure. This is even recognized by the World Health Organization, even with all of its other problems. And so it's kind of like the canary in the coal mine. If this is happening with thyroid cancer, then what is happening with leukemia? What is happening with any other disease you can think of that would be linked to radiation?
Wow. I mean, it's really a wake-up call. It's terrifying, and all these poor kids, it's a nightmare. Thank you, Beverly. Stacy, you've been waiting so patiently. Tell us a bit about yourself and what do you think of all this talk of Three Mile Island and Fukushima. We haven't even talked about Chernobyl, which is in the middle, but maybe we'll get to that.
It was nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me on, Harvey. Oh, gosh, what do I think of it? I'm living it. I've been living it for years. It's pretty hard. Well, I got into back into researching it through a film project that I've been working on, and you know, there's so many cancers in this area, and I mean, I'm pretty much, you know, I've grown up here in Central PA all my life, and so I've just watched the latent health effects of TMI play out in real time.
And so you didn't leave. You didn't leave after the accident.
I didn't leave, no, I did not. Well, I mean, my family and I took off, but I found out that we came back Sunday, which really didn't make, and we left on Friday, so it really, you know, the accident happened and radiation, you know, started at 4 a.m. on the 28th. You know, we had exposure.
What day of the week? What day of the week was that?
Say that again?
What day of the week was
That's a Wednesday on the 28th.
So you left the next day on Thursday, but you came
back.
On
we left
Sunday.
When they evacuated on the 30th. Mostly everybody did. We were told it was fine. There was no reason to evacuate beforehand.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 10. I had undiagnosed celiac at the time.
Oh my God!
My immune system was at risk.
You were in the thick of the radiation. How far away from the reactor were you?
I think we were within the 10-mile evacuation zone. I was in Camp Hill, and it was in Middletown, so I don't really know.
And so you came back to Camp Hill, and you've stayed in central Pennsylvania ever since?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up here and married here as well, so I'm now in York County. I was in Cumberland County at the time.
Well, tell me what you think. When I... came out when we came out with the book Killing Our Own. I was on the Today Show with Bryant Gumbel, and I said that people died at Three Mile Island. Now this was in 1982, so it was three years after the accident. And I said that our radiation, our research showed a definitive connection between people dying in central Pennsylvania and the radiation coming out of the nuclear plant. And the next day, the nuclear industry, there was a group called the Atomic Industrial Forum, which was an industry trade group, sent a two-page telegram to the president of NBC News demanding a retraction and saying that I was, you know, a Carmi Pico subversive and that Bryant Gumbel didn't know what he was talking about. He didn't say any Bryant Gumbel. He just kind of said, I said people were killed at Three Mile Island,
He said, uh-huh. And then we went ahead. So the nuclear industry completely freaked out. And then they demanded, and so a guy got back on and said I was a complete idiot. But fortunately, Chris Wallace said, well, we'll have to have Mr. Wasserman back on to debate you. And I debated him, and he got so angry at me for saying that anybody was harmed by radiation at Three Mile Island that he literally picked up my book and threw it at me. And once the cameras were off, and it was a big book. So what you, as someone who's been there since you were 10, what do you think of the assertion
that people
were harmed?
We were made to feel like that, Harvey. I mean, we were all pretty much told that, you know, no radiation was released. It's safe. It was fine. There's no health effects. It's, you know, it's all BS. And, you know, and they can't hide from the truth when, you know, the 20-year marker hits and my friends are getting breast cancer at age 30. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, we're 10 years old and we're all there. We didn't leave pretty much. We did. It was for, you know, a day or two. And, you know, because, oh, it was all safe. And you know, the list is endless with cancers around here. I mean, you start at that 20-year mark. I mean, I've buried a lot of friends. Two days ago, I just lost a close friend here. April, that battled a long battle with breast cancer. She beat it. Then she got leukemia, two bone marrow transplants. You know, her brother donated it, rejected. You know, we're in her 40s now, and so young, and she fought a hard battle. She just lost it 2 days ago, and that is just sadly becoming normal. It's horrible. The list between, I've seen the children fighting leukemia at an epidemic rate, along with thyroid disease and cancer, are just pretty much everyone in the area. It's a given, practically. Women's health issues, they're rampant. I mean, since radiation hits your reproductive organs, you know, ranging from breast cancer, infertility, fibroids, numerous degrees, you know. It's just, and there was one guy fishing in the river the day that it happened and died with skin lesions all over his body that his wife sent me pictures of, just, you know, the stories are horrendous. And the entire families around here have been affected. Heart disease, lung cancer, melanoma, they're all common now. And worse yet, the uncommon cancers are now, they seem to be household terms. Brain cancer and tumors in such young, healthy people pop up all the time. The Amish, I don't know. I haven't heard anyone talking about the Amish because they don't, you're not going to, because they don't allow you to film them. I lived at that hospital for well over a year. I lived with the Amish. I mean, I became very close. Little Anna, we lost little Anna to leukemia. That was her second round of battling leukemia from age 2, and then my daughter's age 10. They don't talk. They don't, you know, they don't want filmed. And they don't talk to the press, but they're everywhere in that hospital. They lived in Lancaster right next to TMI. They farmed the land. They didn't leave. They didn't have TVs. You know, one area you're just not going to hear about. And that my, you know, my thought on it is, you know, I've done extensive research, you know, the lies. I've dealt with a lot of the reporters that were here back then that flew over the towers. They're all sick. They risked their lives, and, you know, some are gone, and the workers, too, a lot of them. I mean, we've got the one lady we talked to and did a testimonial. Her husband was there refueling. Everyone else had hazmat suits. They didn't give any of those guys any. You know, he died of thyroid cancer, of course, and all the other guys are passed, too. And he was like, it was empty. She was sitting there telling us in this testimonial, and it was empty, practically. And he's like, he couldn't believe it. And so anyways, my take on it, I've been involved in a film project now for a few years, since about the end of 2015, and met a screenwriter from Portland, and teamed up and worked on this project. And just, you know, it's been playing out in real time. So, and just
horrifying.
Covering a lot, bringing light to everything.
Now, Stacey, is there anyone that you are aware of who has done actual epidemiological math-based studies of the impacts of the cancer rate?
Yeah, I called when I met Jill back in the end of 2015, read her script, and I said, you know, it's really missing one important area where we need the proof. You know, we're really trying to dig, you know, to see what happened, but we need the proof. And I said, let's go after the medical community. We need to find out what their thoughts are. It's always been a hush-hush. So, you know, being involved with, you know, a cancer battle in the family and everything, several of them, you know, I know a lot of physicians in the area. I actually personally had my one physician that I worked with who diagnosed my Hashimoto's disease and nodules. She had done a lot of studying on TMI, and her and I discussed it intensely over the years. And she, not only, ironically, both of her, not one, but both of her boys ended up getting thyroid cancer in the last several years. Yeah, and she had treated so many patients in the area. It's crazy. And she, you know, is on board. We've got Dr. Goldenberg, they were doing Q&A on 27 News, and I called in. It was about PA having the highest thyroid cancer rates in the area, in the state, sorry. And so I called in, and I said, I got Dr. Brian Saunders, and I said, can you tell me what your thoughts are? I mean, you're all the medical, you know, doctors over there, professionals, and what their thoughts are as far as the link between not just thyroid cancer, but all of them, and TMI. And yes, absolutely. He said, I was absolutely kind of shocked because usually you don't hear that, you know, they don't want to talk about it. And I said, well, then tell me, what are you doing about it? And it was at that particular moment. I think my kids thought I was nuts because I was doing the Snoopy dance afterwards. And he said that Dr. Goldenberg was heading this, Dr. David Goldenberg. It was a thyroid study, a molecular study. They were looking at the tumors pre-TMI, 70s and on up to, and then comparing them to the molecular makeup of those today. And shortly after that, Hershey Med set out the announcement, and I was just elated, and I was waiting patiently for that study to come out, which happened to come out the day after Three Mile Island announced their closing.
When is Unit 1 closing? It's closing soon, I think.
2019. They say it's going to close. I'll be surprised.
Well, we'll see. The economics on these reactors are terrible. Have you ever run across Jane Lee or Mary Osborne?
I'm sorry. I just met with Mary the other week, actually. Jane Lee, she's passed.
Yeah, she was a wonderful person. You know, I have
great
to say, and we'll get back to you, Libby and Beverly. All the important studies on the nuclear issue and on many of the polluting factories in this world have been done by housewives, by women living on farms or in communities with no support from any institutions, no affiliations to universities. The most important study done at Three Mile Island was done by Jane Lee, who was a farm widow, and her friend Mary Osborne, who lived nearby in central Pennsylvania. And they went into Lower Swatara County, and they surveyed over 500 homes, and they did the mapping, and they showed, you know, a cancer rate that was, you know, you would expect it in Hiroshima, for God's sakes. And, of course, they were dismissed, just as Lois Gibbs was dismissed at Love Canal. But this is the most important work that's been done. And I'm glad to be in touch with you, Stacy, because I just for the record here, and then we'll go back to Levy. I saved my papers from those interviews I did in 1980, and I just donated to the University of Massachusetts. And we came across 9 of the old cassette tapes of interviews I did. And we're going to transcribe those interviews. And, you know, the accident will be 40 years next year. And, you know, it's just horrifying that there was one scientist named Stephen Wing at North Carolina who just passed away, along with Ernest Sternglass. And Sternglass and Jay Gould and, I'm blanking on his name, the radiation and health, Joe Mangano. Yes. So they've been studying these numbers for a long time. And there's absolutely no denying that people were killed at 3 Mile Island. And God help us at Fukushima. But I got to tell you that when my article came out in 1982 and our book came out, we were assaulted as if we didn't know what we were talking about. And I will tell you, and then I'll go to Libby. I wrote an op-ed based on our work, our preliminary work before I did the book at 3 Mile Island. And I sent it to the New York Times. I had had a couple of op-eds published in the New York Times. And the editor of the New York Times editorial page was very conflicted. Her name was Charlotte Curtis, and she happened to be from Columbus, Ohio, where I was from. And she said she really wanted to publish it, but she couldn't publish it. And this is an opinion piece. She couldn't publish an opinion piece in which I said that I thought that people had been killed at 3 Mile Island and the animals had been killed. She said she could not publish an opinion piece in the New York Times where I asserted that. But she published a piece where I said that the farmers in the area thought that maybe they had been harmed. And so it had to be twice removed. And I will say also that the Baltimore News American, which no longer exists, sent a team of 3 reporters into the area to look at the animal problems. And the Department of Agriculture of the state of Pennsylvania did publish numbers that indicated that there was just a complete holocaust of farm animals. And
you know what happened, Harvey? The guy that was doing the study there, MedEd, hired, it's a friend of my father-in-law's. He's actually since passed, Doc Weber. He was hired by MedEd before TMI happened. The animals were dying, the stillbirth and all that. His daughter had told me, given me another vet's name also, and he told me he was having lunch the next day with one of the head, one of the guys that worked for the EPA back then, or was it Department of Health, but he said that man asked and pushed to do a study. And they said no on the animal.
Yeah. Well, I remember Doc. I interviewed Doc Weber. I remember
Doc. Good guy.
Yeah, he was a very good guy. So, and you should look at our book, Killing Our Own, online. It's free online.
I do. I have it.
Okay, very good. Libby Halevi, your nuclear hot seat, this is all familiar to you. Why don't you connect the dots here? We've got 3 Mile Island, then we had Chernobyl. Now we have Fukushima. Do you think anybody has been harmed by any of these accidents?
Well, of course. You know, it's a matter of, do you recognize and acknowledge the truth that is right in front of you, or do you go with the disinformation that's been out? We're talking a lot about fake news, quote unquote, these days. The nuclear industry has specialized in it for years. It's also known as propaganda, because they've had a cash cow, and they wanted to protect the cash cow, even if they couldn't protect the real cows in the areas, be it in the Fukushima area or in Pennsylvania or any place else. There is a playbook that the nuclear industry follows, and I've seen this come together in my own mind in week after week, because I do a new segment every week in addition to interviews. And so I get to see the patterns of behavior. And if there is an accident, the first thing they will say is that there is no significant damage, that there is no immediate danger. And those are just fluff words they put in there to put you off the scent of the real story, because it may not be immediate, but there is danger because there's no safe exposure to radiation. They can say it's not significant, but who's to determine what's significant and what isn't? And they have controlled the narrative. The nuclear industry, their toadies in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the overstressed, undereducated journalists who are out there have all been rigged into the system that underplays whatever is happening in nuclear. I think that's also supported by the fact that it is such an invisible yet existential life-ending threat. I mean, what we're talking about here is something that will never go away, is always dangerous, and is potentially the end of humanity. depending on what happens with nuclear, that there is a tendency, certainly in this country, to avoid any serious discourse on it, which is supported by the nuclear industry. So it is up to activists such as yourself for all the decades while I was still asleep. I have been in the battle now for 7 years since Fukushima. I started Nuclear Hot Seat 3 months after Fukushima began, and it has been on the air every week with a new episode since that time. It is crucial that we put the information out.
Give us a hike. We'll get to the end here. I mean, I could talk to you three for the next 2 hours, but we only got another 10 minutes. Tell us, Libby Halevi, how people can hear your podcast and about your book that's coming up.
Right. Well, the show is available at nuclearhotseat.com. There's a yellow box on the page, and if you sign up with your first name and your email address, you'll get a weekly email informing you as to the show, so you've got the link right there. But you will also get a chapter from my upcoming book, which, fingers crossed, I finished the last chapter, will be out as of May of this year. It's called Yes, I Glow in the Dark, 1 mile from Three Mile Island to Fukushima and Nuclear Hot Seat. And really, it's the story of the making of an activist from somebody who was caught up in the Cold War, then oblivious, then at Three Mile Island, then in post-traumatic stress. And Fukushima cracked me out of it to the point where I got active. But where I thought I knew things, I didn't know very much. And every week, the scales have fallen from my eyes so that I see this industry, I see what it's doing, and I am now dedicated to getting information out, but couching it in human terms so that people can relate to it and understand it. And if people go to my website, nuclearhotseat.com, I've got 350 episodes posted there, so you got more than enough to listen to. But by signing up on the email list to get the free chapter, you will also be on the notification list when the book gets published, because I'm doing it, I'm self-publishing it. And in that way, you will be able to find out in a very accessible way what these stories are about. Because I'm not an expert. I'm not a scientist. I am not an engineer. I can't crunch the numbers for you. But what I can do is tell my story and perhaps Stacy's story or a version of it, and Beverly's story and yours, so that people who know nothing can learn something, and people who already know something can learn a whole bunch more. And at the same time, encourage the activism.
Libby, I'm going to disagree with you. You are, in fact, an expert. Your Nuclear Hot Seat show is great, and we look forward to your book. Beverly, thank you, Libby. Beverly, what can you tell us what's going to happen next at Fukushima? By the way, we saw over the weekend an astonishing movie called Nuclear Cattle about ranchers near Fukushima who have refused to slaughter their cattle or taking care of them. I mean, it's one of the most moving pieces of work I have ever seen. And Beverly, your husband, I know, is over there. Tell us just in a minute or two what comes next for you in Fukushima.
Well, we're just going to continue talking to people there. I mean, I think similar to what you did during Three Mile Island, just talk to as many people as possible, work as hard as we can to get information translated, and try to add to the kind of sketchy picture that we have about Fukushima here in the United States.
All right, well, let me ask you very quickly, and before we have to go, do you think that anyone has been harmed by the radiation from Fukushima?
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously the children that have thyroid cancer, and then, you know, just hearing the stories here about 3 Mile Island and leukemia and everything, you know, we hear from people all the time about people being harmed and people being sick and having leukemia. And interestingly, somebody who often contributes to helping us out for Nuclear Hot Seat, her son worked at the power plant there. And when he was a child, he actually had leukemia. And there were a lot of leukemia cases even before the accident. So you know, venting or whatever. I mean, just the very idea of living near a nuclear power plant, you're exposed to radiation.
Right.
So there were health issues even before this horrible disaster happened.
Well, there were health issues in central Pennsylvania.
And of course, a lot of people died
as well
during the evacuation.
TMI Unit 1 opened in 1974. Beverly, thank you so much. How do people get a hold of you?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Beverly. Stacy, we'll finish with you.
Thank you. I'd love people to realize how much is going on here. We have a Christine Lehman and Joe Rodriguez opened up a Facebook page, 3 Mile Island Survivor. There are 4,000 people now talking and sharing stories of the health effects from TMI. Visit it, check it out. It's in.
What is it again? What's the Facebook page?
3 Mile Island Survivor Facebook group.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a closed group.
The group has TMI alerts. It's been there for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. There's people are really starting to talk. We're having an event on the 29th. I'm hosting, and I've got a great panel, Dr. Joshi, head of endocrinology. I've got reporters from 79. We've got Heidi Huttner coming in, and Beyond Nuclear will be here, and the guys
all right,
from
so let me,
1979
let me ask you real quick
WKBA. What?
Let me ask you real quick before the music comes in. Were people harmed by 3 Mile Island?
Absolutely.
And is it over?
No, it's sadly, a lot of it's just beginning. It's hit our DNA. Go to the hospital, take a look. Okay. It's sad. It's hard. I mean, you know, it's going on as we speak, and I think it's time for change, and that's why I am doing what I'm doing.
Well, all three of you, it's been an honor to be on the show with you, and Stacy, if you will contact me, I want to find someone to transcribe these tapes from 1980 and find out what happened to the actual people. So if you will contact me at solartopia@gmail.com, I can't talk to people from Chernobyl, 3 Mile Island, or Fukushima without, you know, wanting to throw things through windows. It's a horrible situation. And, you know, if you look at the progression of nuclear accidents, at Fermi 1 in 66, it didn't blow up. We've had Chernobyl, Fukushima. God help us. Thank you all so much. See you next week at Solartopia.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.